Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 438. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about crab cakes, the National Aquarium, and one really big flag as we go to Baltimore, Maryland. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. This episode of the Amateur Traveler is again brought to you by Blogger Bridge. If you're a company and you want to connect with content creators, bloggers, podcasters, videographers, and writers, check out bloggerbridge.com. One big announcement that I didn't want to bury at the end of the show, and that's that the Amateur Traveler, specifically the Amateur Traveler podcast that you're listening to, won a Lowell Thomas Travel Journalism Award last week. I was very pleased and maybe a little surprised. I happened to be attending the Society of American Travel Writers Conference, and so I was there when the awards were announced, which was a nice bonus for my trip to Iceland. I'd like to welcome back to the show Nancy Perrote. Nancy writes about both senior travel and boomer travel at about.com and has come to talk to us about Baltimore, Maryland. Nancy, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
And I say welcome back to the show. Nancy was on talking about the region outside of Rome, but we're going domestic this time. I put out a request for Who Knows Baltimore because we had one of the listeners of the show said, can you tell me more about going to Baltimore? So why should someone go to Baltimore, and what's your connection to Baltimore, Nancy?
Well, my connection to Baltimore is that I've lived in the Baltimore area for a total of about 12 years. We moved here initially with my husband, who's in the military, and it's pretty much become home to us. My son was born in Maryland, and my daughter was less than 2 years old when we moved here. So this is, for all intents and purposes, our home. We do a lot of sightseeing in Baltimore. My feeling about Baltimore is it's a really fun city. It's got a very unique vibe to it. It's family friendly. It's got plenty of things to do if you want to experience nightlife. It's such a diverse city that there are so many interesting places to eat. You'll never run out of good food in Baltimore. And it often gets overlooked because Baltimore is so close to Washington, D.C. A lot of people will come there and they'll go, oh, sure. Baltimore is close, but we want to do all the museums and such in D.C. And they sort of skip it. And I think they're really missing out. It's a neat place to visit.
And I will confess that I have spent very little time in Baltimore because I was in D.C. and there are all the museums there.
Right. So we're going to change your mind.
Exactly. And we basically went up there when I was a kid. Well, I guess I was 17 when we went to the East Coast for the first time for our big bicentennial tour. And we went up to see Fort McHenry. And that's right. Really all I have seen in Baltimore. And when you say food, I think crab cakes. And that's all I know about Baltimore. So what should I know? What should people do when they're in Baltimore? What kind of itinerary would you recommend?
I would definitely say that Fort McHenry is a must-see spot. The Star-Spangled Banner just celebrated its 200th anniversary in Baltimore. So Fort McHenry has a beautiful new visitor center that you start at and you mm-hmm. can watch a film. And then you can go and explore the fort. They have great Park Service rangers up there who can really give you a sense of what it was like to be there during the Battle of Baltimore when Francis Scott Key wrote the Star-Spangled Banner from a vantage point out in the harbor, and give you an appreciation for how important the American flag is to our country. What is a flag? What's a symbol? And that type of thing. They call it the flag talk, actually. And it's worth going just to be part of the flag talk. I always tell people go when the fort is opening or closing, because then you can help put up or lower the replica Star Spangled Banner flag that flies over the fort.
So, and they are flying one, because I remember the Star Spangled Banner that they flew at that time was a huge, huge flag.
Right.
We're not talking about a normal size flag. So they are flying a replica of that.
Yes, the original Star Spangled Banner is in the Smithsonian, mm-hmm. but they, when it's not too windy, they fly a full-size replica of that Star Spangled Banner flag. If it's too windy, the flag is so huge it will actually snap the flagpole, so they can't.
Well, imagine, that size one.
But even so, the smaller replica is still big enough so that it requires many, many people to help unfold it and get it to the flagpole. And it's just a really neat thing to do, to be part of that. So I highly recommend Fort McHenry, and it's easy to find, and there's parking there if you have a car. If you don't have a car, one fun way to get there is the water taxi from the Inner Harbor area, so which does stop at Fort McHenry. So you don't even need to have a car to get there.
Excellent. And for those who are not familiar with their American history, some of our foreign listeners or those of you who fell asleep in school, we're talking about the Battle of Baltimore being when the British had already just burned Washington, D.C. and burned the White House and were coming up the Chesapeake in the War of 1812.
Correct.
In 1814. And they were stopped by this one stubborn little fort here that wouldn't let the Navy sail past. It wasn't that the fort really could do much damage to the British ships, as I recall, because I don't think they had guns that had the range, but they wouldn't lower the flag. They didn't surrender, and so eventually the British did sail off. Now, there's one quirk, besides being a really big flag, about the Star Spangled Banner that they flew over that. The flag had 15 stripes. At that time, that was the last flag where they added both a star and a stripe.
Right,
and
for every new
they decided
state.
15 was starting to head to pinstripes. So
probably because it was so hard to fly the flag on windy days, actually.
But yeah, once they added the 16th state, they went to just 13 stripes,
13.
And
yes.
And that has been the same ever since. Excellent. What else should we see besides Fort McHenry?
Well, if you are a history buff, I would also suggest going to the Star Spangled Banner Flag House, which belonged to Mary Pickersgill, who was the seamstress who actually created the Star Spangled Banner. They have some nice exhibits there about the War of 1812. They have good children's programs. It's a very small place. It's kind of near the Little Italy neighborhood, so it's easy to get to on foot, by car, if you don't mind parking in a parking garage in Little Italy and walking a couple of blocks. So for history, there's a lot to see. Another neat thing in the Inner Harbor area that's often overlooked is the USS Constellation. Now, I'm partial to this because my husband is in the Navy, so...
Sure. Sister ship to the Constitution, Old Ironsides.
Well, it's actually the second ship of the name Constellation. The original Constellation was the sister ship of the USS Constitution, which is moored in Cambridge, Massachusetts, mm-hmm. and is still an active Navy ship. This Constellation was actually built in, I believe, 1853. The keel was laid somewhere around there, and saw active service starting in 1854. So she participated in the Civil War, various blockades. She was a training ship for the Naval Academy and is now a beautifully restored museum right in the Inner Harbor. So it's a fun thing to do. You can explore the whole ship. They have great tour guides, and it's a nice little historic diversion if you don't perhaps have time to get all the way over to Fort McHenry.
Now, that's built just at the end of the Age of Sail, just prior to the beginning of the Age of Steam. So it's a sailing ship?
Yes, it's a sloop.
Okay. Okay. Just checking, because you're right around that time the ships changed dramatically.
Exactly.
So... But I thought that would be just before then. Excellent. What else would you recommend? While we're in the Inner Harbor area, anything else we should do?
Oh, yes, definitely. The number one tourist attraction in Maryland is the National Aquarium at Baltimore. It's at we in Baltimore think of as the far end of the Inner Harbor, the eastern end. It's an excellent aquarium. I've been to many around the U.S., and this is certainly one of the top two or three I've ever been to. I've spent a lot of time there. It's fun for kids. It's fun for adults. It can get a little busy on the weekends, so I always suggest to people that if you go in on a Saturday or Sunday, you try to get there when it opens. They have reduced rates on Friday nights during the summer, which is nice if you just want a quick visit and you want to save a little bit of money. But whenever you go, there are so many neat fish to see and other aquatic creatures. They have a relatively new exhibit there that is called the Black Tip Reef, and it's filled with Black Tip Reef sharks. So if you are a shark person, this is the place to go.
Now, you mentioned in the summer that being busy. When do you recommend? Clearly, you get most of your tourists in Baltimore area in the summer, but when is the best time to travel to Baltimore?
Well, I'm always partial to fall travel mm-hmm. because here the humidity is gone. A lot of the crowds are gone, but you still have the warm, sunny days, and it's not too cold at night. It can be a little bit crisp starting in mid-October or so. But there isn't really a bad time to visit Baltimore. They're pretty good at snow removal if you have to be here in the wintertime.
And when you say snow removal, you mean that inch of snow that Baltimore
made? No. We have had some pretty hefty snow years recently. You may have heard about the Snowmageddon in the D.C. area. Well, a few miles north, we got it too. But some winters we get almost no snow, and some we get many, many inches. It's very unpredictable. But you can easily visit just about every attraction in Baltimore in the wintertime, too. Summer is fun because the weather is warm and pleasant. They have outdoor concerts along the Inner Harbor area, along the piers there. So it can get a bit busy at night on weekends when they do that, but it's very festive and fun. Spring is beautiful here. There, a lot of the fruit trees and so on bloom just as they do down
like
south
the cherry,
along the Potomac
right.
River. Yeah, we don't have cherry blossoms, a festival or anything like that up here in Baltimore. That's definitely the District of Columbia's prerogative.
Right.
But it is a very pretty season here in Maryland, too. So there's really no bad time to come.
Is there a particular day of the year that is particularly good, a festival or anything special?
Most holidays have really nice festivals. Mm-hmm. I'm partial to 4th of July at Fort McHenry. They really do it up there. They have special programs all day long. So if you are wanting to get some of the patriotic spirit, that's a good time to go. They have a huge St. Patrick's Day parade the Sunday before St. Patrick's Day. And
I recall that being one of the top five in the country. Am I wrong when I say that?
I don't know how it stacks up in terms of size or ratings to, I mean, of course, New York City has a fantastic parade, and there are other cities that have good parades, too. There's a lot of community spirit at the Baltimore St. Patrick's Day Parade, and I get to say that from experience because my daughter is in it every year, so that's a fun thing for me. But there are many, many Irish groups here and Irish dance schools. Mummers come down from Philadelphia to participate every year. Irish wolfhounds, poodles dyed green. If you are looking for something that's fun and community oriented, that's a great parade to come to.
Excellent. And you mentioned mummers, and I know that we've talked about that before, but just in case somebody doesn't know what a mummer is.
It's
do the
hard
mummers
to
come down with the dadders? But
No. The mummers are groups of musicians that come down. This is a Philadelphia tradition. Mm-hmm. They are dressed in very brightly colored, strange-looking costumes that are hard to describe. They're not exactly clowny, but they kind of are. They're very colorful, and they look a little bit like they should be ragtag, but they're made of nice materials, and they play different instruments and march around, and it's a fun tradition that's really hard to describe without visuals, because I can tell you that the costumes have fringy things hanging off them, and that they have funny hats, and they're all dressed as each group of mummers dresses the same, so that there's sort of a rivalry that's kind of reminiscent of the cruise in New Orleans,
right.
If that makes sense to you. But it's just a very different tradition, and every year I'm standing along the parade route and everybody's going, who are those people? Because if you don't know anything about Philadelphia, you probably don't know what mummers are.
And then anybody who wants to hear more about that, we have done a show on Philadelphia way back in the archives, so you can hear more about the mummers. But I just didn't want to gloss over that and assume that everybody remembered that show that we did 8 years ago or whatever it was.
Excellent.
Excellent. What else should we see? We were still in the Inner Harbor.
The Maryland Science Center is a fun science museum. That is at the sort of southwest end of the Inner Harbor. And in between there and the National Aquarium area, there's a shopping and eating complex called Harbor Place. A lot of tourists go there, but a lot of locals go there too. So if you're looking for a quick bite to eat or an interesting shop to stick your head in and look around, that's a fun place to go. Kids like the candy store there very much. Parents be warned. I mentioned the water taxi. This is a good mm-hmm. way to get around Baltimore if you don't have a car and you're trying to get to tourist sites, because they've got the taxi routes set up to go just about anywhere you would want to eat or shop that is accessible by water, starting with the Inner Harbor and then going over to the Fells Point neighborhood, to the Fort McHenry, as I mentioned, at different spots around the Baltimore's Inner Harbor area.
We're moving on from the Inner Harbor to where then?
Well, I guess I want to mention, if you think about...
I think we just took a water taxi to Fells Point, so I wasn't sure.
Yeah, well, we can do Fells Point. Fells Point is a neighborhood that was originally part of the Port of Baltimore way back when. So there are still piers there. The main drag in Fells Point is called Thames Street. And there are lots and lots and lots of restaurants and pubs and eclectic little shops. If you want sort of a place to spend an afternoon shopping and dining, hanging out with friends, enjoying the beautiful weather, Fells Point is a really neat place to go. It's also one of the main nightlife areas in Baltimore. So if you want to go out on a weekend evening, that would be one area I would definitely recommend.
Excellent. And then you were taking us someplace else before I diverted you.
Oh, I was taking us back toward Fort McHenry, actually across from the National Aquarium area along the Key Highway. There are a couple of museums I didn't want to miss. One is the Baltimore Museum of Industry. Baltimore has always been, of course, an important port city and a city of many different types of industries, everything from fish packing, railways, all kinds of things. And that museum showcases that aspect of Baltimore's history. But then there's also my favorite museum in Baltimore, and that is the American Museum of Visionary Art. This is a museum like no other. I've seen it described as a folk art museum, and that is not exactly how I would describe it. The common denominator for this museum is that every piece that is on exhibit at the museum was created by someone who's never had formal art training. That's okay. The only common denominator, okay. I might point out. So if you think of adjectives like eclectic and unusual and fascinating, that is the American Visionary Art Museum. And you don't always know what you're going to see because they have many changing exhibits. Last time I was there, I saw an exhibit of hand-pieced quilts with embroidery on them that had been done by someone who had to go into hiding from the Nazis because she was Jewish. She hid with her sister, and she chronicled all of these events on these enormous quilts. And then they had a video that you could watch to better understand what their experiences were like and what happened. Previous to that exhibit, the previous time I was there, I saw an exhibit in the same space that was all about pieces made from reclaimed household material. So someone had smashed dishes and made mosaics out of them. Baltimore has a long history of painted window screens, and somebody had sort of done a take on that using reclaimed doors and painting them. Just very interesting things. Another exhibit I saw one time was a whole bunch of post-it notes where people put their secrets on them and you could read them.
Oh, I think I've seen an exhibit like that. Yeah.
Another person had done tiny, tiny miniature paintings of just about every famous painting in Western art that you can think of. Dozens and dozens and dozens of them. And of course, the exhibit wasn't very large because these are all like 1 by 2 inch replicas of Starry Night and the Mona Lisa and so on. And this person had never had art training, hadn't gone to art school or anything like that. They were beautiful, tiny little replicas. It was really amazing.
Interesting.
So it's definitely a fun place to go.
And you mentioned in your list of things that Baltimore is known for the railroad, and many people may be surprised that they actually know the name of the railroad that used to go into Baltimore without realizing it, because it's one of the squares on Monopoly.
Monopoly, exactly. The B&O Railroad, and there's actually the B&O Railroad Museum in Baltimore. If you're a train buff, this is definitely a must-see stop.
Oh, excellent.
Occasionally, they will also get the special Thomas the Tank Engine train to come in there for the younger set of railroad buffs. So you have to, if you want to do something like that, you have to look on their website and see when that might be happening. But whether or not Thomas is there, if you like rolling stock and you like railroad history, this is a great museum. They have a roundhouse, so many of the locomotives are in the roundhouse, and you can walk right up to them. And they are a good museum for kids. They have a lot of children's programs throughout the year. It's really fascinating. And there are lots of neat photo opportunities, too, because you can get so close to the trains.
Excellent, excellent. There's a train museum out here in Sacramento. We may need to do an episode sometime on Sacramento that is truly outstanding as well. Cool. Where should we go next?
Where should we go next?
I'll tell you, I'm getting a little hungry by this time with all this walking
that we have done.
And you mentioned food at the beginning. We haven't paid off on that yet.
Sure.
So I know the crab cakes.
Yes. Baltimore is famous, of course, for its seafood. And crab cakes are sort of the state dish of Baltimore, of Maryland altogether. Mm-hmm. Every year there are competitions in various crab-related cooking areas. They have a crab soup competition. They have a crab cake competition. There are secret family recipes. Each restaurant has its own way of doing things. So if you are looking for crab cakes, a local chain of restaurants here is called Phillips, and they have their flagship restaurant in the Inner Harbor. It's in a building called the Power Plant, because it used to be a power plant, sort of near the National Aquarium. And it's one of many restaurants in that building. But certainly if you're looking for someplace near the Inner Harbor where you can be assured of getting a good crab cake, I would definitely send you there. And in the summertime, they have a crab deck, so you can go out and indulge in the other Baltimore tradition of crab feasting, where you spread out newspapers on a table and dump a bushel of crabs on and get a hammer and bash them open and pick out your food. It's a very Maryland thing to do.
Excellent. But what else do I not know about Baltimore food?
What you don't know about Baltimore food is how diverse it is.
Okay.
One of my favorite places is actually also listed as the top restaurant on TripAdvisor the last time I checked it. And it's a restaurant that's only open during the day, and it's not open on Sundays, and it's not in Little Italy or the Inner Harbor or anywhere that you've ever heard of. It's called Di Pasquale, and it's actually part of an Italian grocery store in an area called Highland Town. Hmm. So you would have to drive here or take a cab. It's not water taxi accessible. But they have fabulous, fabulous Italian food. And I get to say that because I lived in Italy twice. It's worth a detour. And if you love Italian cookies or Italian cheese or Italian wine, that is a great place to go to buy those things as well. So I do send people there often, even though it's definitely a daytime stop. We have lots of Italian restaurants in Baltimore because there is a Little Italy section. Nancy Pelosi grew up there.
Oh, okay.
In fact, there is now a street named for her there. But there are many good restaurants there to choose from. But we also have non-Italian food. You may not know that we have a very well-known Afghan restaurant in Baltimore. Hmm. It's called the Helmand. It's in the Mount Vernon area. Mm-hmm. And it's owned by the Karzai family. And if that name rings a bell, it ought to, because the owner is the brother of Mr. Karzai, who used to be the, I believe, prime minister of Afghanistan until just now.
Right.
So that's a very well-regarded restaurant, and it's not something that you would perhaps expect in Baltimore.
And so meat, kebabs, rice, those sort of things.
Yes, and also a few traditional Afghan desserts. Mm. They change their menu around now and again, but it's definitely worth your time to go. And it's a high-end restaurant, so save your money, but it's worth it. Another thing that we have a lot of is Irish pub-type restaurants. I mentioned the large number of Irish groups and people in the Baltimore area. So there are quite a few pubs around in the Harbor Place at the Inner Harbor. Tiernanog is the Irish pub of choice. But there are also a lot of pubs near the ballpark and the football stadium, which are not terribly far, a few blocks walk from the Inner Harbor area. So you can go to the Pratt Street Ale House and have a nice meal if you are looking for pub grub. And it's very traditional pub grub. They have shepherd's pie and fish and chips and that type thing. That's usually where we go after the St. Patrick's Day parade is over, actually. And there's another pub near the ballpark called Pickles Pub, which is green on the outside, and it's kind of a fun atmosphere.
Well, and you mentioned the ballpark, which we really should give a nod because...
Yes, we should.
Because Camden Yards, which is the Orioles ballpark there, really changed in a very positive way the whole process of designing ballparks across the U.S., and it became really the instigation for a lot of things like the park that I enjoy, AT&T Park up here in San Francisco. Really have to give a nod to what they did at Camden Yards, which was make an old-style ballpark.
Yes, they did. I was lucky enough to be able to go to games the very first season it opened, and when it was a brand spanking new ballpark, and we still go as often as we can, and it's still a beautiful ballpark. Camden Yards was designed to give that old-time feel that people were missing in baseball. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Dodger country, and Dodger Stadium is another place that hasn't changed since I was a kid, but it doesn't look anything like Camden Yards. Camden Yards has a lot of green space, and it's architecturally planned to take advantage of the older brick buildings in the area, and the new structures that were put up around Camden Yards were designed to blend in with that. They have a really nice picnic area. I have never had a seat where I couldn't see what was going on, and I've sat all over the ballpark. It's just a really comfortable, fun place to go to watch baseball. Adjacent to that, they share parking lots as M&T Bank Stadium, where the Baltimore Ravens play. So regardless of what kind of sport you enjoy, you can probably find something going on in Baltimore. And Baltimore residents are very, very, very devoted to their teams. But if you like the opposing team, there will be someone else here who likes the opposing team too. Yankees fans come down from New York in droves when the Yankees play the Orioles, and so do Red Sox fans. Mm-hmm. East Coast rivalries, they're really fun to participate in, and so you can wear a Red Sox t-shirt to Camden Yards, and you'll be perfectly fine, and you'll have plenty of company.
And perhaps some spirited discussion.
It's fun, and it's nice, because Camden Yards makes you feel like that.
Excellent.
You just feel like, hey, take me out to the ball game, and it's a nice place to watch a ball game.
Excellent. What else should we see in Baltimore?
I did mention the USS Constellation. There are some other historic ships in the Inner Harbor if you are of a nautical bent. There's a Coast Guard cutter and a Chesapeake Bay lightship and a submarine. The ticket for that is part of the ticket for the USS Constellation, so you have to walk from one of those areas to the other to see all of the ships involved. But those are there, the historic ships. Another fun thing to do, even though it sounds super touristy, is to take a Baltimore Harbor cruise.
Okay.
Local companies often will do that for, say, holiday lunch parties or team building, exercises, that type thing. So it's not just a tourist thing. There are some trips during the summertime that take you out by Fort McHenry and do the historic narration version of the trip. And then there are others that are like a brunch cruise or at night dancing and what have you. But it's just fun to get out on the water. And the water is so much a part of Baltimore and of Maryland history. When you get out on any part of the bay, you just feel a little bit more connected to the local area. So that's definitely a fun thing to do. Okay. If you don't have time for that, you can always rent a dragon pedal boat near the National Aquarium and do your own pedal boating around Inner Harbor for an hour or so. And then you'll probably be hungry and want more food.
What do the guidebooks recommend that you would say it's just not really worth the time?
A lot of people make the pilgrimage to Edgar Allan Poe's gravesite, which is in Baltimore. And he lived in Baltimore too. The Edgar Allan Poe house is here. It's struggled because it's in a disadvantaged neighborhood, and the city cut its funding quite a few years ago. So they've really struggled. And at the moment, I believe they're only open on the weekends. If you don't know your way around Baltimore, you might want to skip those just because they're a little bit harder to find and you might not necessarily want to walk to them. But if you're a literary buff or you love Edgar Allan Poe or you're a big fan of horror and mystery stories, then it might be worth the pilgrimage. So it's definitely a personal choice.
Okay. And you mentioned a disadvantaged neighborhood, which really means that we have to talk a little bit about crime, because Baltimore has a little bit of a bad reputation with that.
Yeah.
Any recommendations or advice in terms of Baltimore from that point of view?
If you are in the areas where the tourist attractions are, you are not going to have any big problems. Mm-hmm. Baltimore is a relatively large city, and so there are going to be some big city problems here. If you stay around the Inner Harbor, and you see Fells Point, Canton, which is a little bit farther east than Fells Point, Locust Point, where Fort McHenry is, I think you'll be just fine. I've never felt like anything bad was going to happen to me, and I drive around there and walk around there and so on. There are some areas in western Baltimore and some areas in eastern Baltimore where you might be more of a target for crime. But if you just use big city common sense, don't go wandering around by yourself at 2 o'clock in the morning. Have a designated driver if you're driving and do all the things you would do in any other big city, you should be just fine.
Okay. You had mentioned nightlife, and we haven't delivered on that yet.
This is an area where I don't spend a lot of time as a working mom going out to bars and what have you, but there are plenty of them. As I said, Fells Point is definitely one of the top areas to go to. I mentioned the Canton neighborhood. That is very much an up-and-coming part of Baltimore. There are many areas in Baltimore, actually, where people have rediscovered the city. Maybe they grew up in a family that had moved to the suburbs, but they work in Baltimore, and they discovered that it's really nice to live close to work in an area that is growing more vibrant with more things going on. And definitely Canton falls into that category. And so there are now more restaurants and things to do in that part of town as well. Baltimore is often called a city of neighborhoods because that's kind of how the city grew up, mm-hmm. so to speak. And so each neighborhood, whether it's centered around, in the old days, it would be like an ethnic neighborhood, Little Italy, for example. And now these different areas that have been redeveloped and young families have moved in and working couples and single folks. And so there's pretty much something going on for nightlife around the Inner Harbor area. You'll find things a few blocks away from there. And then, as I said, definitely consider Fells Point, and then you might want to venture a little bit further afield. But if somebody says to me, where should I go out, find a nice bar, maybe I can listen to some music, go down to Thames Street and Fells Point, and you're bound to find something you like.
Okay. I'm standing in the prettiest spot in Baltimore. Where am I standing and what am I looking at?
Well, I think I have two or maybe three. My prettiest spot in Baltimore is standing atop Fort McHenry looking out onto the water, because I love history and I love water. And if it's a nice sunny day at any time of year, people are probably flying kites or they're out on boats. Marylanders love being on the water, and people of all backgrounds buy boats and they spend time out on the Inner Harbor. They can't bring a personal craft into the Inner Harbor, but in that area around Fort McHenry on the West Channel near Locust Point. So it's just fun to be out there and watching families do things and looking up at the sky and looking for seagulls and then looking out onto the water. And if you're me, you're imagining Francis Scott Key out on that boat waiting to see what he was going to see the next day. So that's one of my favorite ones. And my other favorite one is probably standing at the Inner Harbor, people watching. Looking out toward the dragon boats that I mentioned, toward the National Aquarium, because there's always something fun going on there. I'm a big people watcher, and sometimes folks come down and do a little bit of the street show thing. Other times you can watch tour groups walking around, and maybe you can eavesdrop and learn a little bit about Baltimore without having to go on the whole tour. You can see families doing things, people listening to music. Occasionally they'll get inspired and they might dance. It's just a fun place to be.
Excellent. So you're a Navy spouse, so home is a little hard to define right now for you, but Baltimore, I think you said before we started recording, is as much home as any place is right now. How do you know when you become a local?
For someone as map impaired as I am, one of the ways I know is because when my GPS doesn't work in Baltimore, which it never does, I'm not lost. So that's the first way. Baltimore is home because you can fit in regardless of who you are or where you're from. You don't have to be of any particular background or persuasion to find someone like you in Baltimore. It's a very accessible city in many ways. The city has really reinvented itself since the 1970s, mm-hmm. when the Inner Harbor was renovated. And then when Camden Yards came in, like I said before, I was living here at the time. And it was like when you're in school and the old cranky principal moves away and you get the young, wonderful principal in your school. And the first day of school is suddenly like Christmas because it's so different. That's what Camden Yards did for Baltimore. Really, it is. And that spirit of, hey, this is our city and we love it and we love our sports teams and we love our restaurants and we love our food trucks and we love everything about being here, that spirit really is alive in Baltimore. As the history buff that I am, the other thing that draws me to Baltimore is this strong sense of being someplace where part of our country's history began, and being able to walk around those streets and go to the first Catholic cathedral ever built in the United States. Benjamin Latrobe was the architect. So he was a very famous architect in Washington, D.C. as well, but he also designed the Baltimore Basilica, and it's been lovingly restored to its 1821 glory. It's a beautiful building. Even if you're not religious at all, it is definitely part of Baltimore's history. It's worth a walk by and stick your head in so you can see how they've incorporated the federal style colors that Latrobe originally chose. It's a neat place to go. This is just a fun place to live. There's always something going on, doesn't matter what time of year, and you just feel like you're part of it. And not all cities are quite that welcoming.
Excellent. Before we get to my last three questions, what else should we know before we head to Baltimore?
You can get here in a lot of different ways. And we didn't really talk about how to get here, but Baltimore, Washington, Thurgood Marshall International Airport, BWI for short, is the closest airport. And there's light rail from there to downtown Baltimore. So if you really don't want to have a car, you don't need to have one. We have a circulator bus like they do in DC called the Charm City Circulator that's free and takes you on designated loops through the city. So if you want to get closer to theaters, for example, you can do that. And I mentioned the water taxi. We, of course, have plenty of taxi cabs. And then there's an Amtrak station right in downtown Baltimore, too. So whatever your preferred mode of travel, you can get here.
And that's connected to the Acela line, the best
of
the Amtrak system.
Yes, it is. It goes up to New York and points beyond.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And I did not know the airport was named after Thurgood Marshall. Well done.
Yes, he's a Maryland native son. So there's a really nice monument to him down in Annapolis, actually. So he did some really great things for the African-American community. And, of course, being the first African-American Supreme Court justice, he's a very important man here in Maryland. And there are a lot of things here named after him to honor his memory.
Excellent. And we didn't talk about side trips, but Annapolis would be obviously one down where the Naval Academy is. Are any other side trips you would recommend while we're in Baltimore?
Well, if you have a car, definitely Annapolis would be my first choice. And then I would continue on, if you have time, to Maryland's Eastern Shore, which is another great area to visit. Definitely the complete opposite of Baltimore in a lot of ways. Baltimore is city. Baltimore has that really urban feel to it. And the Eastern Shore is very rural. There are a lot of really fun small towns to go to. The waterfront life is very important there. But if you have time to spend a day out there, it's really fun. St. Michael's is one of the top destinations out there. But I also like a little town called Rock Hall, which is really a great place to go if you like fishing, because there are a lot of places to charter boats and go fishing from there in the summertime. And also Chestertown is another nice town on the Eastern Shore that I've spent a great deal of time in. So I would definitely send you to any of those spots.
Excellent. And I have a fondness for the Eastern Shore, and we'll probably have more of a fondness in 3 weeks when my daughter is married in St. Michael's.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Last three questions. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Baltimore.
Well, there's two. One is Hunfest.
Yeah, what?
Baltimore has its own dialect. And you quickly discover, especially if you're the parent of a child, that everyone in Baltimore is Hun, except little boys, and they're all little buddy. So Hunfest is sort of a throwback to beehive hairstyles and that type of thing. And it's...
So 1950s diner, what do you have,
it's a
hun,
celebration of that. And so people dress up, and who's got the strangest beehive and the weirdest glasses and the most I Love Lucy dress. And it's definitely only in Baltimore. Absolutely, definitely only in Baltimore. And my other one is the Kinetic Sculpture Race is sponsored by the American Visionary Art Museum that I mentioned before. Mm-hmm. And that is at the beginning of May. And this, again, definitely only in Baltimore. The teams who enter must create a sculpture that is people powered and can move on a street and in the water. The teams race these vehicles, and the other requirement is that it must include a sock monkey. And so these contraptions, and they have very bizarre themes. The museum's official Kinetic Sculpture is a giant pink poodle named Fifi. So she is part of this competition every year. But anything bizarre that you can think of, somebody's thought up a kinetic sculpture that goes with that. And so the race takes these kinetic sculptures on a street and through mud and through water, powered by the people who are theoretically inside the sculpture. And the way you win is by coming in right in the middle of the pack.
Okay.
If you come in first, you don't win. So,
I believe that qualifies as a good answer to this question. Thank you.
Yes, only in Baltimore.
Finish the sentence. You really know you're in Baltimore when what?
Well, one of the ways you know you're in Baltimore is when you look around and you are the only person not wearing either a Ravens jersey or purple.
Okay.
And you are surrounded by hundreds of people. We have a tradition here, Purple Friday. It does not matter where you go.
For the color of the Ravens.
Yes, purple and black are their colors. Mm-hmm. Where you go, you can be going to the dentist, you can be going to have your hair done, you can be going to church, you can be going just about anywhere. And if you aren't wearing purple, you feel a little bit left out because you're not wearing purple. And I don't have a lot of purple gear, so this happens to me on a regular basis. And I think the other way you would know that you're in Baltimore is that you're eating a crab cake and you can tell that they just made it there that day right then with fresh crab that came from the Chesapeake Bay, and you can tell.
Excellent.
You can tell because the chunks of crab are really big. You can tell because it has Old Bay seasoning. We haven't talked about Old Bay, but this is the Maryland seasoning that you put on crab everything. They even brew Old Bay beer here.
Hmm.
It's very popular. The Flying Dog Brewery brews it, and when it first came out, you could not find it. It flew off the shelves as fast as they could load it on. I'm not a beer drinker, but I can tell you that there's definitely a bit of Old Bay hint to it, and my husband, who is a beer drinker, says it's really great stuff.
Excellent. And last question, if you had to summarize Baltimore in just three words, what three words would you use?
Baltimore is eclectic.
Okay.
Baltimore is fascinating.
Okay.
And Baltimore is delicious.
Excellent. Excellent. Nancy, where can people read more about your travels?
Well, you can always read about my travels at about.com. If you go to about.com and you search for the word senior travel, you will find my smiling face and all of the articles that I've written for about.com over the years. Another place I write for on a regular basis is a website that is a community for women ages 60 and older. It's called 60andme.com. You don't have to be 60 or a woman to read the articles there. I contribute travel articles to 60andme on, as I said, a pretty regular basis. So those would be the top two places. I have a little Facebook page dedicated to senior travel as well, but I do most of my writing for about.com, and I put up photo tours and travel tips and things of value to the senior travel community and to people who like to get out and experience life the way locals do.
Excellent. And our guest again has been Nancy Perode. Nancy, thanks so much for coming back on the show. We normally don't have somebody come back on that often, but Nancy did such a good job last time that we brought her back more quickly. And I hope to hear you again on Amateur Traveler talking about some other destination.
Thanks, Chris. It's been a pleasure.
In news this week, we have an interesting story that went up about a mom who loses it when a flight attendant asks her to stop torturing other passengers with baby guppies. A mom was on a flight playing her iPad for her 2-year-old. Her 2-year-old apparently won't wear headphones, and so she had the volume turned up, and the flight attendant asked her to turn it down, and she refused to do so, not seeing the difference apparently between using the device with or without headphones. She got in an altercation when she was met by security after the plane, started shouting things like, "I'm an American citizen, I have rights, don't I?" One of the security officers removed because they didn't make her feel safe, and claimed that she didn't need to follow the directions of the flight attendants because she was not a robot. Now, the most wonderful thing about this whole story is that she didn't think she was in the wrong, and so she videotaped the whole thing and put it up on YouTube and threatened to put them up on YouTube to show the whole world how she was victimized. But it doesn't come out that way when I look at it. When you're on a plane, you have to follow the rules, and there's no right in the Constitution to being annoying. Before we end this episode of The Amateur Traveler, if you could do me a favor, we do still have some spots, especially on the 15-day trip to Morocco. We have 5 people signed up for that. If we don't get at least 8, then actually it's going to cost me some money, because the rate that we put out is the rate that I guaranteed based on an 8-person trip. So if you know anybody who wants to come on a 15-day trip or even on the 10-day trip to Morocco, go to the Book Travel tab on the AmateurTraveler.com site. That trip again is in April of 2015. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@AmateurTraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at AmateurTraveler.com. Remember, a transcript of this episode will come up in a couple weeks, and those transcripts are again being sponsored by J-Way Travel, who are experts in travel to Eastern Europe. So thanks again to J-Way Travel for those transcriptions. You can follow me on Twitter at Chris2X or join our Amateur Traveler Facebook community. And as always, thanks so much for listening.